over to the other side. This would be the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Now, when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat till it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" Then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. But he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?" And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" So the application of this parable is patently obvious. James chapter 1, verse 9, where he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials." And it doesn't seem like the disciples had a lot of joy in this trial, which is natural. I think that makes sense. When we fall into trials, joy is not all of our trials. But James has to tell us that that is our response, count it all joy. And he goes on to explain why we should count it all joy. Because the effect of the trial, hard to miss this analogy, right? This analogy that just as they went through this difficult storm, they also go through a time of trial, and it seems chaotic, it seems out of control, it seems unpredictable, there's no way that we know what's going to happen, and it seems like we're just riding it out, right? We're in a boat and hoping that everything is going to go well. And yet, just as the disciples, we have the one in the boat with us, who is in control of all this. So first let's go through and kind of on a basic level about what happens in this account. So we didn't read it, but right before verse 35, the context of this, the timing of this, is the Lord has just finished giving some parables. Most notably, he gives a parable of the sower and the seed. He gives these parables, and he has this discussion with his disciples at the end of all this. They ask the meaning of the parables. He has the discussion with them about the purpose of parables, to hide truths from those that we don't want to search for them. Right? So someone who doesn't know all the different stories, just because they're storing that them. And someone who knows what truly is the truth, and they can go deeper and define real truth. So he gives us this application, he explains the parables to them. So it's this very intimate moment with his disciples where he's opening up to them more than he does to the people. He's a time of teaching, focusing on his disciples, and working with them. So at the end of that, verse 35, evening comes, and I don't know much about sailing, but I would imagine he probably prefers not to go sailing when it's right before dark. Uninformed opinion, but it's unusual. So it's unusual that he says, let's cross over. We'll cross over. They push out. These other small boats follow with them. And then he goes to sleep. So why on earth does he go to sleep? Right? You think
the Lord knows what's going to happen. The Lord knows the storm's going to arise. He can control the storm. He's framing it. He knows what he's going to do.
goes to sleep, so that he'll have to come to him to draw him into this. And that's often how we create this profile. And our first thought often isn't when going to work. The first thought is, well, I can fix this. I can do something. I can make this work. I can talk to somebody. Whatever it is. And we kind of have to get to the end of those things, the end of our resources, where we can recognize this part of the world. It shouldn't be that way. And it might be that. So he goes to sleep. And after he goes to sleep, this storm arises. Mark tells us that the waves eat into the boat and start to fill it. Matthew tells us that the waves coming up and crashing over into the boat. Storm. They're in dire straits here. It's not a small ripple. It's a powerful storm. And I think that, too, helps to minimize trials in nature. Some trials are more dramatic than others. And I understand that, but we don't want to minimize any of them because they're all things that affect us and that cause us pain and cause us anxiety. So as the storm comes, they come to him, and it's interesting their reaction. Because he's in the sea, they assume that he doesn't care about them. He doesn't care that they're so are there times that maybe we're in a trial and we think, why doesn't the Lord fix this? Why is he letting us do this? Does he not care for me? And of course that's the opposite of the case. He's taking us through this trial because he cares deeply. He cares deeply about what kind of person we are. He cares deeply about our relationship with him and the strength of that moment. So that can be one result of the trial, is that just going through that with the Lord, going through that difficult time, that supports that relationship stronger. So it's because he cares about us that he takes us through these trials. They felt not care about us, don't care that we're perishing, don't care that we're in trouble, and they asked for his help. So even though he was, at least to their eyes, disengaged maybe, or unaware, or inactive, right? You see someone who's asleep, that describes them, right? They're unaware of what's going on, they're inactive, they're disengaged in the situation. But he wasn't any of those things, right? He was completely in control, he was completely with them, and he understood fully what they were going through. He understood their anxiety, their trouble, and he knew what he was going to do. So they wake him up, and they say, teacher, our master, our Lord, we care that we're perishing. Save us. I think it's interesting here, and it's commendable, that they don't question his power. In other words, they don't come to him and say, Lord, is there anything you can do? They come to him and say, Lord, save us, knowing that he can, knowing that he's in charge of us, knowing that he has the power. He's proven it to them time and again. We've been talking about these miracles for a couple months now. Seeing all the things that he has power over, his power over death, his power over sickness, his power over disease. So they understand that he has this power. They're not questioning that. What they question here is his care for them, his love for them, his concern for them. So maybe even in a situation like that too, we don't necessarily question that the Lord is in control, but maybe we question that he cares, that he is concerned for our well-being. And I think it's not only that they felt that he didn't care for their well-being. I think it goes beyond that. I think they also thought he didn't care about their mental well-being, their anxiety, their emotions. Right? In other words, maybe they thought, the Lord wouldn't let anything physically happen to us. The Lord wouldn't let us die. But we're really anxious, and he doesn't seem to care that we're anxious. He doesn't seem to care that we're bothered, that we're emotionally distraught. And that too can be something that they say, I know the Lord's in control. I know the Lord's got his second hand over me. I know he's not going to let anything dangerous happen to me. lesson we learn as we go through this trial is giving him control, giving him accepting his control, and blessing him, and allowing him to give us peace, that we understand his, not only his power, but his love for us. So they come to him, they ask him to save him, to save them. They wake. And I kind of get this sense when he awakes, I can almost imagine how the disciples felt. You're in a situation where you feel like you're losing control, and then somebody walks in, and you're like, okay, they can handle this. I don't have to think about it anymore. I can step back and let them take charge. Right? Like, for instance, if I were watching somebody's kid, or babysitting, and they're screaming, and they're crying, and I don't know what to do, and then the mom walks in, suddenly I don't have to worry about it anymore. Right? Their job. So I can relax. Right? Somebody in charge walks in, and me, who knows nothing, I don't have to worry about it. And I think that's kind of the way they would feel, is here we're lost, we're in danger, we're distraught, we're helpless. Then the Lord wakes up and it's like, okay, he's got control, he's in charge, he knows what to do, we don't have to worry, it's in his hands. And that should be our sense throughout the whole trial, right? That should have been their sense from the very beginning, that even though he seems like he's not there, even though he's not visible to them, he's still in charge. He's still in control. He's still got this figured out. He still knows what he's going to do. And he still has a plan to carry this out perfectly. But only when he awoke did they get that sense to understand that. So he wakes up and he first rebukes the wind and the sea, which seems a bit odd. He rebukes the wind and the sea. But he tells it to be still. He calls for peace. And immediately, there's calm, because the wind ceased and there's a great calm. So not only did it start to die down, not only did it slowly start to abate, it immediately collapsed. Immediately there was calm, there was peace. And the Lord brought that to him. And then he turns to the disciples, and after rebuking the wind and the sea, he rebukes them. And says, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And again, it's clear that they had faith in his power. What they didn't have faith in was his care. They didn't have faith that he wanted what was best for them. Their faith lacked in that sense. And so he's saying, why are you so fearful? You should know, you should understand how much I care for you. You should understand that I care, first of all, for your physical well-being, but also I care for your emotional well-being. I care that you're anxious. I care that you're troubled. I care that you're distraught. And thirdly, I care for your spiritual well-being. I'm trying to teach you something. I'm trying to teach you a lesson. And all of this, the purpose of this, is to teach you something, to improve you, to bring about good in your life. So basically the question is, do you really think I would have let harm come to you? Do you really think I would have let anything, any danger continue? So they had faith in his power, but not in his care for them. And so they fear and marvel one another and say, who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? And of course, we know the answer to that question. It's the creator, the sustainer, the one who had all this in his hand, he had control over this, and he was in charge of power, and he knew exactly what he was doing the entire time. So we can think about the application of this. The application is, again, fairly obvious to us, and we've talked about it already, this idea of the storms of life that we can go through. Again, these are our, this was a big storm. This was not something minor. And we go through things that are truly trials. They're truly difficult. They're not minimized. So think about the application. I'm going to, first off, ask a few questions that actually come to my mind. And then talk about a few lessons. So as far as the questions that came to mind, one question that came to mind is, did he actively bring the storm, or did he just allow the storm to occur? And I'm deliberately,
actively, bring us into our lives,
again, with that purpose of
drawing us closer to himself.
As James would say, bringing about things like Jesus. The second question, which is one that they asked, is did he care? Did he care about them? We've already talked about that, that he not only cared for their safety, not only did he care for our safety, but he cared about their anxiety. He cared about their emotional and spiritual well-being. He cared about their thoughts. He cared about their heart. He does for us as well. So he won't set us up for a trial that brings us anxiety without also bringing to him and find peace and joy. He's not sadistic. He's not doing things to hurt us. He's carrying us through these things to teach us lessons. And then another natural question that would come up, why does he cause the storm? Why does he allow this storm? Why does the storm arise? And I think I mentioned this in one of the previous Sunday school lessons, but I think a lot about what Bill McDonald said, that the Lord always acts in perfect love, wisdom, and power. And so everything that he does is a combination of those three things. And those three act in harmony to bring about his purposes. So in perfect love, he cared for them. He wanted the best for them. So whatever this storm brought, it was the best thing that could happen for them. In perfect wisdom, he knew this was best for them. He knew that this was what they needed. And in perfect power, he was in control of all of it. And he began the trial and ended the trial at the perfect time, in his perfect control, in his perfect wisdom, in his perfect love. So all three of these, if we trust that he loves us, if we trust that he's in control, we must trust that he's wise and that he knows what he's doing when he brings the trial. So back to James chapter 1, we think about one final question, for me at least, kind of crystallized the whole thing. And that is, if you ask one of the disciples after they get to the other side, you ask them, do you wish that storm had never arisen? Do you wish that this could have been uneventful? I don't think they would say that. I think after it was all said and done, I think after they had said through the whole thing, they were glad that they had. I think they were thankful for what the Lord had done. And so I think that can be true for us as well. When we get to the other side, we get to the end of the trial, we get to the end of the result of it, and we can look back and we can say that it was good to see. We can say, I'm closer to the Lord than I was before. Or, the Lord has worked on my patience, my love, my care for others. Whatever it is, the Lord has been working on me, and I'm thankful that he changed me the way he did. We wouldn't want to live with that necessarily, but we're thankful after the end of it that we came through it. That's not super helpful to someone who's going through a trial moment. It's not super helpful to say, don't worry, in a little while it's going to be fine, it's not going to happen. But it can be comforting to us when we're not going through a trial, knowing that the next time one comes up, the end result will be good. So just briefly, as we close, a couple of lessons for us. First of all, when the Lord brings a storm, when the Lord brings a trial, or allows a trial, it's never out of neglect. It's never doing it because we just can't be bothered to continue to let how we are. The Lord understands that. The Lord knows our mind and knows our heart. So, a lot of times, we have the benefit of hindsight to recognize that good that comes out of trial. But I think there are times where we can't. We have times where we don't see it. But knowing the Lord's heart, we can trust Him that even in the trial where we don't see the good, and when we don't see the result of it, how we trust Him that it's there. We trust Him that someday we will. That He will show us all that He's done. And we'll agree with Him that everything He's done has been good, all been perfect. He's all been done with perfect love, wisdom, and power. So when we ask in the middle of the trial, does He care about what we want? Not only, again, does He care about our physical well-being, not only does He care about our spiritual well-being, our safety, but He also cares about our emotions. He cares about how this is affecting us. And I think we can safely say that any pain that we feel, He has felt. He knows the pain of us. He understands our weakness. He understands our pain. And we know that He wouldn't allow that. So when a trial comes up, how do we react? How do we deal with it? And I think that's something that we learn throughout this experience. As we go through trials, maybe at first we don't react well. Maybe we don't learn the lessons. But as we go through more, as we see the Lord's faithfulness, as we see the way that He works on us, the way that He uses these things to build, we can trust Him a little more the next time a trial comes. And then trust Him a little more the next time. And I think people like Abraham who learned faith over time. And that's our life. We learn faith over time. We learn to trust Him more. It would be great if we all had Abraham's faith when we were saved. But we don't. And we face these trials, we face these difficulties to draw us closer to Himself, to forge that close bond with the Lord, to walk with Him. So when we encounter a trial, remembering things like this miracle, remembering our past trials, remembering the trials of people that we know, can give us confidence in the Lord Christ, and that faith in His eternal, infinite power over the situation, faith that He is in control, and that He is working on these things deliberately. We should have faith in His eternal love, that He's doing these things out of His own power. He's doing these things because He cares, not because He's indifferent, but because He wants ultimately the best for us. And faith in His wisdom, His eternal wisdom, that not only does He have the control of the situation, not only does He do this out of good for us, but He knows what He's doing. It's not that He has the best of intentions that makes mistakes. The Lord never makes mistakes. He has that perfect wisdom that He knows what He's doing. He knows what the end is going to be from the beginning. And He knows how to bring about the best of the world. So, I would just close by echoing James. Count it all joy. We can be joyful. We can rejoice when we have this one in the ship with us. We have the one who's in control of the sea of waves. The one who cares for us. The one who has perfect wisdom, perfect love, perfect power, and is asking to draw us to Himself, asking to improve us. We can be thankful for Him. We're thankful that He is working in us. So,